Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be talking with Carla Hannaford. Carla's a repeat guest on the show, and we are going to be talking how learning is not all in your head. Carla is a very experienced woman when it comes to the area of education. And Carla, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna.
Now, you have been involved for so many years. You've got more than 30 years of teaching others. You have been involved with biology at the university level. You worked 4 years as a counselor for elementary and intermediate school children, especially those that had learning challenges. And I really, really enjoy how you approach the aspect of learning. When you decided that you wanted to dedicate yourself to the area of education, what was it that motivated you to explore how the brain worked? Why is it that you decided that this was something you really wanted to commit yourself to actually be a better teacher?
Well, you know, I didn't read till I was 10. It wasn't a big deal back in the 1940s and 50s. Yeah, there was no special ed. And I was a very active child. Today, if I were in school, I'd be in special ed. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter had the same difficulty. And so that motivated me, you know, to look at, okay, what is it exactly that is important in the learning process? Is it reading? Is it, you know, what? And so I think that's what motivated me. My background is in biology, and my PhD work was in neurophysiology. And so just trying to put that together, you know, to really understand, you know, as I was developing teaching, as I was teaching, it was the age of the brain. 1990s was a decade of the brain, and everything was big around that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went to any conferences, I talked many conferences on the brain. But if you go to conferences now, they're body-mind. And what was interesting to me is I needed to move. I needed to be really active. And somehow I was able to make it through, you know, through graduate school and on. And I had a feeling it had to do with the movement that I was doing. And then I ran into, I was given this opportunity to work with students that was called a CSAP program, Comprehensive Student Alienation Program, at the intermediate school. And I had been using with my university students Super Learning, which is Georgi Lazarnov's work with the beat a second music in the background, the Baroque music,
mm-hmm.
and active and passive concerts. And it really helped with language. And of course, biology is Latin. But when I started working with these students, I ran into a nurse practitioner that was teaching Touch for Health. And she said, if you're going to work with these kids, you need to know about Brain Gym. And Brain Gym is a very simple, they're activities that are cross-lateral integrated movements. And as a scientist, you know, what was lucky about this is I came into it really blind. You know, I had no preconceived notions of what to expect. And so they gave me 19 students. I did this mainly because my daughter was going into the intermediate school, and as a single parent, I thought, oh, this will be fun. I'll get to do this little pilot, 9-week pilot project at her school. She was mortified I would do it. But nonetheless, I had these 19 students, and they would just come in, and I'd have a beat a second music on in the background and ask them what they wanted to do, you know, what they were wanting to work on. And then I do these four activities that this nurse practitioner gave me to do, which was a cross, crawl, cross lateral, like you're walking, hookups, unrolling the earlobes, and one more that I can't even think about right now. And about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks after I had started, the English teacher came to me and she says, "What are you doing with Jesse?" And, you know, I wondered about Jesse when he came in. Come to find out, he was 17 in junior high. He'd been held back and held back. And he was big and mean. He was probably beaten from the day he was born. And I didn't know that. I didn't read these files. I was teaching full-time at the university with this pilot project and then a single parent. So I hadn't read the files, which was really good. So I really had no preconceived notion. This was, for me, a double-blind experiment. And she had come to me because Jesse had offered to read in English class.
My goodness. So he had made that strong an improvement in just the short period of time you had worked with him.
Right. And then the other teachers were coming to me and asking me, and I was just showing him, and then the principal said, "Would you do a little in-service on this?" And I said, "Sure, I'll just show you the few things I'm doing." And then I got fascinated. It was like, okay, what's happening here? Why are these movements making such miraculous changes? And at that time, and that was in the 80s, the mid-80s, there was not a lot of information out there. But I just started, you know, piecing it together with what I knew about the brain and attempting to figure this all out. Now, something shifted big time. You know, we started really looking at the body as important. Before that, it was unimportant, basically. In 1999, Gerd Kepperman and Fred Gage discovered that we grow new nerve cells until the day we die.
Right.
And isn't that exciting?
It is. I mean, it totally takes us out of the caveman attitude.
Yeah. And we can grow as many, well, you know, at least as many as 6,000 new nerve cells a day until the day we die. And, of course, as a biologist, I've been telling everyone by the time you're 6 weeks to 6 months of age, you have all your nerves, and then you just develop nerve networks. But here, all of a sudden, now we're seeing that we're growing new nerve cells. And not only that, the current research is showing it's not just in an area that we first discovered in, which was the hippocampus, the area that has to do with memory, but it's along the spine. And it's in the olfactory bulbs that have to do with smell. And Henrietta von Prague at Berkeley, she's a student of Marion Diamond's, who was looking at enriched environments. And enriched environments are environments where there's lots of fresh air and good food and playmates and toys.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided, because back, you know, 25 years ago, there were articles from Marion Diamond's laboratory showing that rats were growing new nerve cells in the hippocampus. And we said, well, the rats do it, but we're humans. We don't do that. Well, so all of a sudden, we're seeing the same thing. And so Henrietta took the pieces apart of an enriched environment, and what she discovered is that it was these running wheels, cross-lateral integrated movements that were causing these new nerve cells to develop. And, you know, now as we look at this, the big saying right now is, if we didn't move, we wouldn't need a brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the research is showing that the brain is developed, it's wired and rewired throughout our life through movement.
And so, I think that is something that is so important, not just for children. With children, it's vitally necessary.
Right.
And the natural patterning of children is motion.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
there are times when they need to be aware they've got to sit still. If you're in a restaurant, you can't have them running all over the place into the kitchen and dumping dishes and all this kind of stuff. That kind of behavior is not acceptable. But there are processes of growth. And when we're watching a baby learning how to walk, we get so excited. If they bump into things, if they fall down, we go, oh, it's okay, come on, get up, get moving. And one of the components of information that you bring through in your book that I think is really fascinating is the Danish educational system. Now, you mentioned how you didn't learn to read or start reading until you were 10. Mm-hmm. You were very active. You were on the go all the time. And they know with research today, and to me, it just makes so much sense that from the moment a child is born, that child is absorbing information at a super, super phenomenal rate. And part of the processing of absorbing that information is through all of the senses, touch, smell, hearing, tasting, feeling in various ways. And that's why music is so important. There are so many things here. Tell us about this Danish system of education, because I just think it's fascinating how they have come so far and the children just excel in their learning capabilities.
Right. They were actually described as the top education system in the world. Right now that's changing a bit because of the government. But and we were just there in a year ago. Mm-hmm. But I love their approach. It is based on Rudolf Steiner's work. And what they do is, first of all, they give the parents at least a year, sometimes two, at home with the children. One parent, they pay full pay for them, and they have their job when they go back, so that the child has this safety net around them, you know, for at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can go to these places called forest kindergartens, you know, or regular kindergartens. But in those kindergartens, they don't look at numbers or reading or anything like that. They learn social skills. The forest kindergartens are amazing, and I'm starting to see a lot of articles in the United States where they're finally looking at these forest kindergartens with interest, and they're popping up around the United States, and I'm glad to see it. But here are the children in the forest 5 days a week, 5 hours a day, no matter what the weather, and it's cold in Denmark.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But they're learning from the forest, you know. The forest is extremely intricate. They're learning from each other. They're learning how to get along with each other, and they're learning to see. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating watching these children. The forest kindergarten was actually developed in Germany over 100 years ago by a man named Frederick Feubel. And he said, the children are getting sick. They need to be outside. And mm-hmm. so here are these children, and they don't get sick. They're dressed, and they really are learning so much. Then they go to school about the age of 6.5 or 7. And the way they learn to read, I just love this. So out in the forest, they're learning all of this deep understanding of the integration and the diversity, but the integration of themselves with the environment. And they develop a pretty interesting vocabulary. So they come to school, and the teacher will say, write me a story. And so they write a story in cursive. And I want to come back to that, because it's a real mm-hmm. platform I'm working with now, too, around the hand. But they'll write a story in cursive, and it's just lines and circles and stuff. And the teacher can't read it, but they can. So they read the story to the teacher, and it's full of a lot of imagination, and it's full of things that are contextually important for the child. And so then the teacher will say, oh, you're really interested in horses. And they'll go, yeah. So the teacher will say, do you want to see how I write horse? And so the teacher writes horse as in cursive, you know, as a gestalt, as a whole mm-hmm. thing. And so the next story the child writes, horse is written all through it. They read their story to their friends. It shows up in their friends' stories. And this is how they learn to read. It's what's contextually important for them, which is really wonderful. And so they aren't really learning how to read until about the age of 7, 7.5, 8. And in the Danish schools, the way they've been, by the time they graduate, all of them have 100% literacy. And it's not just in reading the newspaper, it's from reading the classics in two languages.
Mm-hmm.
There's no test before the age of 12. They also, I think one thing that's really interesting is that they help develop the curriculum. So the teacher, about every 9 weeks, will say, okay, what are you interested in? And one child may say, oh, I'm really interested in horses. And another child may say, I'm interested in rockets. So those kids that are interested in horses go with the one child, and the rockets interests go with the other child. And then they do all this research, and they pull it together, and then they teach the class about what they're interested in, and the teacher, too. In the meantime, the teacher is bringing in language that applies and math skills that apply to what the children are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And they go really, really deep. And when they do the testing at age 12, it's these low-level skills tests that we're asking our children to do all the time. And in Denmark, when they do this, there are no grades. So the teacher may say, okay, you're a little weak in this area of math. Work on that. But there are no grades. Nobody fails. Nobody's better than anybody. At the end, when they are ready to take their final exam, they choose when they're ready. And they pull together a committee, and it's their teachers and maybe a parent, maybe even a classmate, who get together and they present to this student usually a piece of literature and a piece of art, or a piece of literature and a piece of music or something. And this student must then take these and write a thesis about them, how they relate to each other, how they're different historically, biologically, geologically, socially, and they have a month to write this paper in two languages. And I've read some of these. They're like university theses. And then they come back and the committee decides whether they're ready to graduate. So they're able to go deep. They're able to think deeply. They have a lot of deductive reasoning powers developed through this process.
Well, and that's something that I think is very important. And it's really missing in a great deal of the education. It used to be when you had the little schoolhouses, where there might be one teacher with however many children there were, the older students were teaching the younger students.
Right.
There was an integrative process, mm-hmm. an association, and the kids might be tested and they'd come out. They were just amazingly good. They
yeah.
really did get a comprehensive education so that when they, quote unquote, graduated, they could go out and be a participant in the world. Now, the Danes have a very small country. When we're looking at the United States with all of the ethnic diversity and the tremendously complex system that we have that's so political at this time, it's really going to take a lot to be able to make a shift and change that is going to be of a level where students can really enjoy learning, because children yeah. naturally like to learn.
Right.
And I was talking with some teachers not that long ago where they, in fact, there was one woman that is actually teaching in prisons, and yeah. she herself has found, not unlike what you mentioned, that she has to find out what the interest areas are of the prisoners because most of them are not literate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that they have such a difficult time in society, because they don't fit. They
right.
they do not have that comprehensive development and understanding. Now, they can be brilliant, absolutely mm-hmm. brilliant.
Right.
But they're not utilizing it. They have gotten stuck in a quagmire of illiteracy and ignorance, and so they are in that, and they really don't know how to get out of it.
Right.
So I think education is on so many different levels, and not just socially, but I think having the joy of developing all of the senses is very important. Now, one of the things that you bring out in your book, and there's a lot of parents who probably wouldn't be too happy with this, is eliminating TV for children up until the age of 8.
Right.
I mean, you think of the video games and the other things, and one of the reasons that you say that it's so important that that not be a mainstay in their life is because they are not learning how to play, and they are not utilizing their imagination.
Right.
Now, some people would tell you that's not the case. My kid's got this wonderful imagination. In fact, it drives me nuts. And they've got the earplugs in their ears all day long. They're watching their video games. And why would it make a difference?
Oh, boy. First of all, in the television and on the computer screen, there's a flicker. And if you don't believe it, you turn the light off at night and as you have a television screen on, and you'll see the flicker on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
That you'll see it if you also take a video of a computer screen. That flicker sets up a survival reaction in the brain, and you start to produce cortisol and adrenaline. When that happens, you decrease the chance of learning. It actually shuts down the neocortex by 75 to 85%.
Oh, now that's incredible.
They become reactive rather than able to take in information. So that's just physiologically, that's something we need to look at. The other thing is these children have what we call global brains. They have the ability to take in everything and pull it together in such a way that it's multidimensional. A huge study came out of Germany not long ago showing that children that are on computers early, it's training them to be linear and mm-hmm. that they're only working in zeros and ones rather than this global context where they're able to take everything in and understand it. Now, there's a wonderful book out now called Dumbing Down. Let's see. Dumbing Down America, I believe. I don't have that reference here right immediately with me, but very interesting studies showing that what we're doing with our children right now with, again, the computer games and the television is they're becoming very linear, and they will be able to work at jobs that are on an assembly line, but they're not going to be able to think deeply. They're not going to be able to come up with the solutions that we are going to need, that we're needing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't think outside the box. They're thinking in an extremely linear 0-1 context. And it's really frightening. They are not being creative. The research is there. The research is showing this unequivocally. You know, it's just, if parents can work with children where they, you know, do a moratorium on the television for even a week and the computer for even a week, the children start to learn to play and they start to come up with more imaginative ways of working in their world. And it makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, one of the things that I suggest to parents is watch how the child is when you turn the television off or when you stop them from playing on the computer. They're not nice and relaxed. They can't hold their focus, and they are reactive. You know, they'll fight with their siblings, and they're not nice and calm. Right now there's a huge studies that I've been reading about where it's so important to have downtime, to have daydreaming time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you're not doing anything, you know, where the focus is in the present, is in the moment. And we're saying that that is absolutely essential to the creative brain.
I think that in and of itself is so phenomenal. Children will take the simplest items and they'll become the knight in shiny armor or the monster of the willows or whatever it's going to be. And these things are good.
Yes, very important.
We almost need an imagination room so that there can be that communication. I remember many years ago when I used to be in the Scouts, the Girl Scouts, and we'd be out on a camping trip and we'd start a story. And we'd sit around the campfire. Of course, there was no television allowed, obviously. You're in the middle of the woods. It's dark, right. And all you've got for light is the fire. And so you start telling stories, and people's imagination, and the story might go around the circle. There would be like 30 of us, 40 of us. So that would take a while. And some were more verbose than others, but you had to pick up and add to the story, whatever it was. And it was magical to see how it took its twists and turns, and there was no good or bad about it. It was just, what's your story? How are we going to make this story different, unique?
Right.
What are we going to incorporate into it? And it was a marvelous imagination exercise.
Right.
And sometimes we scared ourselves to death because we did some real spooky stories, and the forest seemed to have eyes that we weren't particularly enamored of. But it really was a significant part of life. And I think that you bring out a comment in your book how when children are talking, like your daughter, she was at a certain age and all she did was talk, 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 talk,
yeah.
talk, 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 talk. And you say, oh, my Lord, can't this kid, shut up a little bit. Talk, 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 talk. But they're thinking while they're talking. And many times they'll be sitting and playing, and they'll be talking when they're playing, and they may have their imaginary friends or what have you, but it's all part of the process. And when they use their hands when they talk, that's why the Italians, I think, is so loving. They use their hands all the time. I'm being facetious.
Right.
But
the hands are
is.
Very connected to language. But here's an interesting thing, too, is that these children that we're seeing today, there's another huge study. This is amazing in science. That we're seeing teenagers now that cannot read facial expressions because they've been, just doing texting, and they may be texting to a person they're walking next to. So they don't know how to read facial expressions or body expressions. The only other group we see that has that is our autistic children. That's really frightening.
Yes,
you know, they're missing
and
that.
You bring out something. There was South Africa. You said rural children in South Africa without available books. They have a very rich oral tradition. And they have excellent three-dimensional and peripheral vision, which is very, very interesting. And traditionally, they speak three different languages, though they may not know English, but they have multiple languages because their environment demands it.
Right.
It's just a part of what is necessary. And when they go into school at the age of five, you said that occupational therapists said that these children were superior to the white children on all but three of the preschool tests.
Right.
Because of what they had learned.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gotten to a point, I think, in this country where we have taken out physical education. We've made it, oh, gee, this isn't necessary stuff. And we have people as adults that have not a single point of awareness regarding these factors. And your book, and I know we're just about out of time, Smart Moves, Why Learning is Not All in Your Head. I just think your book is incredible. And I've recommended it to a number of parents because I think, especially with the babies, we have got such a society today that's so overprotective. We don't want kids climbing trees. We don't want the boys to be out there playing cowboys and Indians or whatever it is they're going to play today. Maybe it's Darth Vader and, Luke Skywalker. I don't care. It doesn't make any difference. Every generation will have its personas that it wants to express through. And that's healthy. Harry Potter, it doesn't make any difference. But there needs to be that expression. And the girls need to have that too. Mm-hmm. It is fascinating how, as a nation, we have evolved a system that has become so far removed from things that were really very, very basic and worked quite well.
Yes. You know, one thing that, just quickly, mirror neurons. Our children mirror us. If we're stressed, if we're unfocused, they're going to be stressed, they're going to be unfocused. If we play, if we're curious, my favorite quote right now from Einstein is, he said, "I have no special gifts. I am just passionately curious."
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we as adults can show that our children that curiosity, that passion in our lives, they will be passionately curious, and they will be unbelievably wise as they grow.
One of the things I want my listeners to know about is Brain Gym. Is there a website that goes into this? Because I really think that Brain Gym can work very well with adults. We have adults
right.
that have learning disabilities, and these are body movements. And so many times people become so inactive, they really become like zombies. And if someone has had a stroke, we just got a call from a friend of ours who had had a stroke, and he has really been exercising and going back to trying to play the piano, and his brain is rebuilding the nerve structures, so he's going to get back to normal. His speech has improved like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
So we are doing this, and Brain Gym is something that I think is marvelous because it's involving doing the figure eight with your hands. Where can we find out more about that?
Good. You just go to braingym.org or information at brain, you know, www.braingym.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is that they're just cross-lateral integrated movements that we used to do all the time, like walking,
right. mm-hmm.
swimming, and things like that. But they're easy to do anywhere, anytime, and athletes are using it. We've seen it with the Olympic athletes. We see it a lot with musicians and artists and adults, you know, as well as children. But they're simple. They're things that you can do anywhere. They're what we used to do.
Now, Paula, what's your website? Because I think people should know about how to reach you, too.
Okay. Right now, my website is through my publishers.
Okay.
So it's information at Great River Books. Or the web, mm-hmm.
www.greatriverbooks.com. GreatRiverBooks.com. Carla, your publications are great. Smart Moves, Why Learning is Not All in Your Head. For those of you listening, if you know of anybody that has children that are they're dealing with anxiety over their children's capacity for learning, if you have known of anyone that has had a stroke, anyone that's having health challenges, maybe with balance, this is information in here that really is cross-age. It
yeah.
is absolutely wonderful. Carla has done a phenomenal job with this book. Smart Moves is just awesome, because if you are getting older and you wonder, gee whiz, how can I keep my brain active, read her information. You'll find that through very simple activities, you are going to be able to keep that brain active. So go to braingym.org and check out her book, Smart Moves. Again, Why Learning is Not All in Your Head. Carla Hannaford, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been a joy having you as a guest.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I'd love to know where you're calling in from. And I'll be giving you my intuitive perspective of what's happening in your life. And you're welcome to ask me a question when I'm finished. Because we were talking about education and learning with children, the book Smart Moves by Carla Hannaford, I came across this quote by Charles Slade Jr. He said, "Education is the biggest business in America. It has the largest number of owners, the most extensive and costly plant, and utilizes the most valuable raw material. It has the greatest number of operators. It employs our greatest investment in money and time, with the exception of national defense. Product has the greatest influence on both America and the world." Now, I don't know the date of this quote, but we in the United States have really gone backwards relative to the educational system. And the love of learning is something that belongs to everyone. But if you do not understand, if you don't have the capability of reading, and you've got all kinds of obstacles that occur in your life because you are deficient, then you try to take shortcuts, and it ends up shortchanging you. Don't turn off to life because maybe you didn't have what you think you could have had or should have had. Right now, wherever you are, take the time to get interested in something that's different from anything you've ever learned. It's sort of like me making blackberry syrup. I gave you the recipe for yesterday. I'd never done that before. This is something brand new. And you might say, "Oh, Donna, for heaven's sakes, you do stuff like this all the time. This is just who you are." No, 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 no. You must be willing to try different things. It could be learning how to dance. It could be learning how to do gardening in a way you'd never anticipated. It might be volunteering, putting yourself in an environment of rescuing ducks that are covered in oil. Who knows? Try different things. Maybe you've always wanted to know how to quilt or how to be able to paint a wall mural. Go and find out. Do something different. Because what happens? It enables the body to expand its own capabilities and potential. And so many times we get so engrossed with what is on the box or the television. And I'm not against television because I love so many of the programs that are done that I really, really enjoy the learning that goes along with that. I love the History Channel. I love all kinds of things that bring levels of education to me that maybe otherwise I would not have an awareness of. So that makes me curious about other things. And that's one reason why I like to do this show. I mean, you go through 400 to 600 books a year, you're definitely going to find some new things you never knew about. All kinds of unique and unusual elements are out there in life. If you have a love of science, if you have a love of medicine, if you have a love of architecture. I think of a friend of mine, she passed away at a very young age. She was in her 30s. And Teresa, in my mind, was a genius. This woman that didn't graduate from high school ended up doing architectural drawings for her house that she wanted to have expanded went down to the city hall of the community she lived in, was approved, and the house was expanded. She had no education. This is a self-educated individual. And yet all of her life she looked down on herself. You see, learning is an ongoing process. You're never going to know it all. Sorry if that disappoints you. I don't know it all. Nobody does. You know what? That's terrific. That means there's so many wonderful things for you to explore in your life. There are so many wonderful things that you can observe. It's exciting. Life has a lot of potential. And just what Carla mentioned, if we don't have the capacity to think and to look at things differently from different paradigms, how are we going to be able to solve problems? How are we going to be able to deal with variables that come up in life? And that's something that we need to stay alert and aware of. The what ifs. When you present challenges to children, you'll see them say, oh, well, we could do this, we could do that, we could do the other. Maybe totally whimsical. Mastermind brainstorming groups are worth their weight in gold and then some. When you take off all the limitations and say, look, we're going to put up a whiteboard, let's see what we can come up with in concepts and ideas. What happens is that there is all this whimsical stuff. A lot of it may be nothing more than just verbal hot air. But someone may say, you know, purple pigs flying backwards, going up to Mars and sitting on the ring. Maybe you're trying to deal with a problem-solving capacity, and for some reason, that illogical imagery of words may spark something in somebody. They go, hey, you know what? We could use this compound to cross with this compound. And why don't we try this? Or we use this color with the decorating, or how about we do that? It's fun. It's fun. And it's when you try to keep everything insulated. There are some things in life that do have a standardization, and that is wonderful. There's nothing wrong with it, and it serves its purpose. Well, we've got a lot of problems in life, and they need new challenges. They present new challenges. Let me rephrase that. Challenges are always there in front of you. So how are you going to work with them? If it's going to be a life or death situation, what options do you have to work with? I think of a Mexican surgeon who was having heart patients coming to him because they were dying. They were under his knife. He was seeing people with hearts that were so diseased. And then one day he got frustrated. Someone came in, the heart, three-quarters of it, was literally dead. He cuts away the dead part, stitches up what's left, puts them back together, and he says, well, that's the best I can do. You know that person lived? And that heart muscle actually, because the dead part was gone, went back to work. He revolutionized something in surgery because he thought of something completely out of the box. A lot of other surgeons wouldn't have even considered that. But this was a man that said, I'm dealing with a certain situation. When the Ebola outbreak was in Africa, there was a doctor who was dealing with hundreds of people coming in. Very, very ill. This stuff is so contagious. One of his nurses gets it. He ends up making a serum, and she's cured. All of the doctors that were there condemned him for doing that, but she was dying. He said, what do we have to lose? He made a serum out of her own body fluids and created and mixing it with something else, and by golly, she lived. But you'd never heard about what he accomplished. You see, so many times, necessity is the mother of invention. And that's where imagination, creativity, luck, whatever you want to call it, comes into play. And that's what we need to remember. We have tough times all over the globe. Just because you may have a group of idiots in this group, that group, or the other group, doesn't mean you listen to the idiots. It means you come up with something better. But you have to be proactive in life. So wherever you are, be proactive. Don't be afraid to explore new paradigms. Don't be afraid to come up with solutions. Be your best friend. And in being your best friend and being willing to learn and grow, you can't help but do good for whoever comes in contact with you. Life is really, really interesting. And if you look at history, you'll find the people that made the biggest accomplishments in life were those that were the most curious. And if Einstein said it, by golly, I think he was a very wise man. Because you never know it all. Ever. It's exciting. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break for just a moment. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Hey, I have got a recipe for you with barbecue beef short ribs. Yes, really simple. And it's about using a pressure cooker. When we come back, I'll share it with you. So have a pad of paper handy and a pen. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna, and I want to let you know what's going to be going on for the rest of the week. Tomorrow we're going to be doing the Best of Donna. We're going to be replaying the interview with Nick Redfern, Men in Black. This is all about those characters they made a movie about, but it's more with the real stuff, stories about real people. And then on Thursday, we'll be back in the studio live. Russell Shippey is going to be my guest. Creating My Obituary is the topic we're going to be discussing. And then on Friday, Step Aside Superwoman. We're going to be traveling to London via technology to talk to Christine Brown Quinn. And I think you're going to enjoy her perspectives. And we've got so many wonderful guests coming up. Out of Place in Time and Space, The Little Book of Missing Money, Destiny versus Choice, Power of Your Past. I mean, we've really got some great guests coming up. So all of that information will be posted, and it will be up on BBS so that you will know exactly who's coming up, what's going to be going on, and then some. And also, I will be giving you upcoming information about my trip to California that will be coming up in the latter part of September. Yes, this is going to be the traveling Donna in just a little bit of time. I can't believe how time is just flipping on by. Okay, let's give you some information on barbecued beef short ribs. It used to be you'd find short ribs in the market fairly frequently, but now you really have to ask for them. But they are delicious when they are fixed properly. Well, if you're like me and you sometimes don't have a lot of time to cook, I love cooking, but it does take time, patience, organization, and you really need to make sure that you've got everything that you need. Well, sometimes recipes require that you bake something. And with short ribs, that is pretty important because they can be sort of fatty and you want to be able to keep them tender and you have to bake them for a long, long time. Well, a pressure cooker has been around for a long time and it is something that can really make short work of a meal. Now, the pressure cooker deals in minutes with what would take us longer, maybe on top of the stove, in the oven, even with a crock pot. And it really creates tenderness with the food that's in it. And it's done with steam, and it's forced through food at a very high pressure within the pot. And even vegetables, it'll cook them so fast that they're not going to lose their nutrients, their flavor, or their color. It's an amazing item. So you can get electric ones, you can get top-of-the-stove models. It doesn't make any difference. It can come in stainless steel. I mean, they really have gotten fancy through the years. And I know that when I was growing up, my mom had one, and she was afraid of it because they could explode on you. Well, they have really refined the mechanisms of the pressure cooker. They've got all kinds of safety factors there, but it's really a wonderful piece of equipment. Now, here's a recipe with barbecue beef short ribs that I think you'd really like. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of shortening, and you need 3 pounds of beef short ribs. You're going to need 4 slices of onion. That's a medium onion. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of chopped green pepper, 1 cup of ketchup, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon of celery seed, 2 tablespoons of brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 teaspoons of dry mustard, and a little flour. Now what you want to do, you want to take your pressure cooker and you want to, if it's a stovetop style, then you want to put it on the stovetop, get it hot, put the fat in it, and you want to brown the ribs. You want to get them nice and brown, however you like it. I sort of like mine extra brown and with a nice crisp outer thing. And then what you want to do is remove the ribs. Once you've browned them, have a pan or a plate nearby, remove the ribs, and then pour off the fat that comes out from doing that. Then you're going to take your onion slices, your green pepper, your ketchup, your salt, your celery seeds, your brown sugar, lemon juice, and mustard with 1 cup of water. You put your ribs back in, pour the mixture, mix everything up, and pour it right over it. And then you cover your pressure cooker. There's a control level. You set your control level at 10. You'll cook them for 45 minutes until the pressure is reached. It'll require 30 minutes of cooking. And then 30 minutes is up. You reduce the pressure for 5 minutes and put the pot underneath, with a lid on, obviously. Put it underneath the faucet. And it's going to reduce the pressure completely, and then you'll take everything out. Now, your sauce, you want to know how much you've got in there. You'll take and return that to the cooker. You thicken it with maybe 2 tablespoons of flour. You can use arrowroot or cornstarch if you like. And you want to have a quarter of a cup of water for each cup of sauce that you've ended up with after cooking the meat. You stir it over medium heat. It'll get nice and thick. And you put your ribs right back into that sauce, you've got a meal for three. It's absolutely marvelous. Coleslaw salad, you've got a delicious meal. And don't forget that berry pie. This is the season for berries, blackberries. I know out here in the Pacific Northwest, we've got an abundance of them, and they are just wonderful. Well, I wanted to share with you a story about a mom who dealt with a situation. It was with one of their children. Their youngest child had neurofibromatosis 1. Now, what this is, I've never even heard of it. It's a disorder that causes tumors in the tissue surrounding the nerves. Now, their youngest child, the parents were Kara and John. They were a Navy family, and this situation, at the age of 5, he had developed, their son, Charlie, an inoperable brain tumor that grew around the optic nerve and blinded him in his right eye. He went through 15 months of chemotherapy. After that, to their dismay, they found that Charlie, who was at this time 7 years old, needed 50 more weeks of chemo treatment. Well, this was scary. A 7-year-old to go through that much chemo, it's horrific, absolutely horrific. He was physically exhausted. They were just having a terrible time. And the boy was just very depressed. And the mother, Kaylee, she said, I've got to be able to help my son. How am I going to do this? Well, at one point, his dad had put a train track around the bedroom. But that didn't last very long because the tracks ended up warping. And she said, we just don't know what we could do. Well, there were some people who found out about the situation. And they said, okay, let's do something that's going to help this boy. But unknown to them, Charlie wanted to do something. He wanted to start on his own a Charlie Santa Day. He collected toys from everybody and anybody so that it could be donated to St. Louis Children's Hospital. And their youngest son said the reason he wanted to do this is that he felt that part of his job on this earth was to help other people. Well, there is a person that decided they really wanted to know how to make Charlie's environment. This 50 weeks is a long, or 50 chemo treatments takes a long time. So they wanted to really do something for him that was going to inspire him to stay well. What they came up with, they found out that Charlie loved trucks, any kind of trucks, big trucks. In fact, they learned that 7-year-old Charlie had a dream. He wanted to have his own truck repair shop. So they put the brains together, various people, and they said, all right, what do we need to do? And they started asking Charlie what he wanted to have in his room. What can do? He said, okay, use orange, use red, greens, blues. He got so excited. So they came up with a concept of designing a cartoon called Charlie's Repair Shop. It was about a mechanic shop that fixed huge trucks all delivered by a freight train. And remember, this is Charlie's desire, his dream. So they asked him to color it. And it took a construction team of people 3 days to change Charlie's room. And you know what? They got volunteers from different building companies, and they said, okay, we're going to really get this going for you. So they ripped up the old carpet, replaced it with new wood flooring, so that Charlie and his dog would be a lot better off. They painted using the colors that Charlie wanted on the walls. They put up Thomas the Tank Engine mural. They had a sign saying Charlie's Repair Shop. They did everything that they could, including using a mechanic's tools chest for a dresser. They used corrugated aluminum panels that was window awnings. They made a desk with a tabletop set on sawhorses. I mean, they just had a blast putting this room together for this little boy. And do you know what they did? They made his bed fit inside what looked like a giant dump truck. It even had a steering wheel. The imagination in this creation of this environment for this child was amazing. Everyone that participated in this project, including all of the members of the family, had a fabulous, fabulous time. Charlie loves his new room. And today, he is a very active kid. But the healing that went on wasn't just for Charlie. It was for all of the people that participated. And it made a complete circle of love and laughter and color, design and form, imagination at its best. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever give up on your dreams. You can have the best of what you want. It may come in a way that you don't expect, but it's yours. Be willing to to allow the world of imagination, such your heart, your soul, your spirit, and your mind. Then use it. This is Donna Sebo. I won't be with you tomorrow. We'll have the best of Donna, but I will be on Thursday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.